Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
Welcome home. Tribe of the Sacred Heart, many of us are a clan. I'm so glad you're here to talk about the great woman, the Holy Mother, Blessed Mother. She's called so many names all over the world, known by all the people of the entire planet Earth in one guise or another, one disguise or another, in so many different ways of being and seeing, so many languages, so much. She is everywhere. And people sometimes say to me, well, how can I see the Blessed Mother? How can I be near the Blessed Mother? And I would say this to you. From all of my years of devotion to her, I would say that anywhere you see compassion, anywhere you see a person bend to help someone who is hurting, anywhere you see utter joy, or say a father lifting a little baby up over his head, laughing, anywhere that you see people savoring life, anywhere that you see people who are merciful, and people who are prayerful, and people who are funny, who make us laugh, you're seeing Holy Mother. She is all strong, deep, feminine, arms held out wide, embracing life fully, protecting it, sheltering it, advising, all of those things. If you have ever come across a wise person in your life, chances are you are seeing essence of Holy Mother. If you are a person who wants concrete evidence, I'll tell you what my grandmothers used to say, that for Holy Mother, there are no proofs other than that we exist and we're made better by her presence. For those who say, I need evidence, I need proof, we are. You and I are. We are the proof. We are the proof. Listen to this, Walter Scott, one of the old poets. His poem probably was taken part of Ave Maria, Hail Mary, meaning, hello, Mary. Hello, how are you? Oh, I'm so glad to see you. Hail Mary, Ave Maria. And this is Walter Scott's prayer. You know, lots of poems are prayers. You know that. Ave Maria. Hello. Hello, Maria. Maiden. Sweet. Listen to a maiden's prayer. Listen to the thoughts, in other words, of someone who is not jaded, someone who is not bitter, the maiden. A prayer? Prayer is simply this. It's thoughts. It's thoughts aimed or questions asked or praise given. Maiden, let's listen to you speak your thoughts aloud, that you can hear through the wild. That's what he says. The poet says, the maiden can hear special thoughts, ideas, ways of thinking that can come through from the wild, from the natural, from nature, from all the things that we are, all the things we feel and be, all of our familial ties and relationships, all our crafts of the hands, all of our great ideas and small ones as well. All of these the maiden has thoughts about. And the poet says, you can save us from despair by those thoughts of that beautiful woman who thinks, believes, and knows anything is possible from this moment forward. That good things can be drawn to us, that healing can be drawn to us, and most importantly, hope. That this is what the great woman carries in her. Safe may we sleep beneath thy care. In other words, we are somehow family. We're familial. We're related to the great woman. That we sleep underneath her hand. That it's her hand that would touch us, that would guide us, show us. I remember when you were little, somebody showed you a seashell or a pebble. Someone showed you a little flower that was growing in a crevasse. This idea is in this prayer poem. The poet says, "We will be cared for by your hands. You will show us things to delight us and to guide us. Even though we might be banished, outcast, and reviled, maiden, hear this maiden's thoughts. Hear this maiden's prayer. Mother, hear me, your child, asking and saying, hello, Mary. Hello, Maria. Hello, Miriam. You're welcome in my heart, in the throne room in my heart. Ave Maria. Hello, Mary. You're everywhere." So you see, this idea about Holy Mother was that she is filled with grace, meaning that she says, does, acts in ways that shower, like a shower of stars, down on others to light their way. In the history of Holy Mother, there have been many conquerings, conquests, invasions, and wars that have attempted to cover over every trace of her footsteps in the lives of human beings. And yet, she cannot be eradicated. She cannot be erased. We dream her at night, regardless of whoever desecrated her holy sites, or who said she never really existed, or who say that she is a foolish idea in a cult. She continues to come straight up out of the ground toward us, asking us to please remember who we really are, that we're hers, that we belong to her. So I made a quilt for over my bed, and it says, "Todos tuos, ergo sum Maria." It means, I belong to you completely, Mary, Maria, Miriam. Todos tuos, ego sum, Maria. I belong to you. You belong to me. I belong to you. You belong to me. And this is the essential relationship, as I understand it, between us and Holy Mother, is that we belong to her while she belongs to us. And it's unequivocal. It's irrevocable. There's no, yes, maybe if you behave yourself. Nothing like that. We are. We belong to her. So on this quilt I made, it has a picture of a tree on it, like a tree of life. And it has little birds in it and flowers and leaves. And it's got little words in it, like happiness and hope and faith and wishes and dreams. And then at the top and the bottom, I'll embroidered this because it's a doorway, this quilt. As you know, quilts are the craft of the hands of women and men. And they are, in the ancient times, these cloths of pictures and considered the dreams, wishes, and prayers that people were carrying and covering themselves with. So on this, which actually goes at the head of my bed, it says that at the bottom, Blessed Mother, it says Immaculate Heart. These are some of her names that she's known by. Mi Madre, my mother. Mirror of Heaven. Ivory Tower. Árbol de la vida, tree of life. Star of the ocean, mar, Mary, Maria, Miriam, mar, the sea. This is what her name means, the oceanic heart, the huge one that cannot be seen across, the enormity of her mercy and her compassion for us. It says, Star of the ocean, please pray for me. In other words, think about me, think about us. I would like to have Mother's focus. I would like to have Holy Mother's focus on us. It says also, restore me, strengthen me, heal me. My gratitude is yours forever. I am todos tuos. I am completely yours. I belong to you. Now, when I was a little girl, we were, I will say maybe about 6 years old. I think not quite seven. I don't think we had made our first Holy Communion yet. We were consecrated to Blessed Mother in a little chapel by some very old nuns. And we were holding our arms out, as was the ritual, was to hold your arms out until they ached and ached and ached, and to offer that up as a sacrifice, that we are so wanting to be yours, we are so wanting to dedicate our lives to you, that we're willing to suffer also. And so there we were, all these little girls, now in little ragged clothes, you know, and clothes were always too short or too long because they were all hand-me-downs, and all our scuffed shoes, you know, and all those, you know, the little buckles, the leather straps that go through the buckles are always all curled up because those two shoes are used by other people before. And there we were with our arms wide out as though to embrace Blessed Mother. And we took vows. And the vows that we took were for obedience and for charity and for several other things, including pledging our virginity for life to Blessed Mother. And so I often say, well, two or three out of four ain't bad, you know. Didn't quite make it on that last one, but the other ones strive very much. And the idea of obedience, as I understood it then, didn't mean that you behave yourself, you know, like Aunt Edna would say, behave yourself, barely. It wouldn't be that. Obedience meant listening for her voice, looking for the hem of her dress leading you and following, asking questions, and when receiving answers, following that guidance, and more so even looking for signs. That to ask a question meant sometimes Our Lady would answer in signs specific to us, so that if a person asked, well, which way should I go? They might be walking through the woods the next day and they come upon an old wrinkled map that's been rained upon, that someone's thrown out of their car, and it says, Chicago. And somehow that's seen as a sign. Maybe to go there, maybe to learn about there, maybe any number of things about Chicago. But nonetheless, because it's an oddity and because it came right across one's path, to accept that as a possible, useful answer to the question that was once asked previous day. And so I want to suggest to you, first, that you consider that you belong, that there's nothing you need do with Holy Mother, that you already belong to her, and that she belongs to you. There is no application process. Quite the contrary. And second of all, I will suggest to you that you make on a piece of paper, or you make on a piece of cloth, some idea of your bond with her, like my quilt, Todos tuos ego sum Maria, put it near your sleeping place. You know, it could just be the espinas that surround Our Lady of Guadalupe, the thorns, you know, the wavy lines, the aura that surround Our Lady of Guadalupe. I could just make a little oval and put espinas all the way around it. And that's good. That's a picture of her. I can put it next to your bed in a place where when you awaken, you see it. And you know that Holy Mother is with you. Just a oval with espinas around it. Glowing rayos, rays of light coming off it. Long time ago, Our Lady of Guadalupe was her original pictures, even though some of her images seem to be related to Our Lady of Extremadura in Spain. In Mexico, where she was first seen by Don Diego, she appeared to have the maguey spines all the way around her. The maguey is a cactus. And also maguey makes pulque, which is a sacred drink. It is inebriative. In other words, it's fermented. So you could become in an alternate state of consciousness by drinking it. And the idea of the espinas is that these espinas are used to cure diseases and put medicine on them and literally thread them right through the fingertips or on the back, the skin on one's back. That they are used also to sew things together, garments, tents, coverings, shelter together. That the espina is this miraculously useful, pragmatic thing all at the same time. That it can be used to take a sliver out that if festering might literally kill a person because it would become so infected and it would rush through the entire body. And the espina literally could pull that out. Or it would deliver medicine into the body. Or be used to make the most glorious and beautiful banners and gowns, coats and suits that you had ever seen that would be worthy of Our Lady, because so many of those that were so elaborate, they were used literally to cover the saints in the churches, you know, to make them beautiful, beautiful gowns, and beautiful robes, to honor, just to honor the idea of this living being, this living force that is a santito, that is a saint, and in Blessed Mother's case, this huge force of the feminine that is literally the mother of God, the mother of God. When I think of the concept, the mother of God, huge, enormous, and she is everywhere. So in Blessed Mother's view, as we learned it when we were little children, from very old nuns whose skin was like paper and withery, and there were wonderful nuns who had come from Africa. They were missionary nuns. And they wore white habits and they had black, black skin, like purple, black skin. And they were old, old nuns who kind of look like old apple ladies. You know the how the apple, it gets all withered and you make a doll out of it? They look like that. They had little rosy, little red cheeks and pale, pale, withered skin. And we had people who were just big, I mean, those huge women in black habits and little teeny skinny bent over ones with little canes. And they taught us that Blessed Mother's view is that all are lovable, all souls are accepted by her, that she is sweetness personified, that you can smell her scent in anything that is sweet, an apple, a rose. It's not by accident. Our Lady of Guadalupe's robe is covered with roses. It's for you to be signaled to enjoy the scent and the fragrances of the world, the beauty, a deep sensory experience. It's a Blessed Mother. Was not only like a tow truck that tows us out of trouble, but giving us wiser ways to look at things and holy ways, but also she's filled with the sensory. Our Lady of Guadalupe, she has a mantle that's made of green with gold stars on it. And these are the waters reflected up into the sky. When you see the sky, and change the color of water by what color the sky is. And the stars move in the streams in the arroyos so beautifully at night. This is what she's wearing. She's wearing the water on her head. It's flowing down all across her body and is filled with the moving stars, the Pleiades, the Milky Way, all moving across her head and her body so beautifully. She has her beautiful gown that's red, it's covered with golden outlined roses. The roses, you know, they are this incredible flower that long ago, when people were ill, they will bring an apple and a rose to them, the sisters. Los dos hermanas, the two sisters, apple and rose, because apples are from the rose family. And they have a scent, each of them considered heavenly. So sometimes in Mexico, you'll see some of the old people sitting with rose petals or sitting with just an apple, smelling it. They are praying. They are having thoughts about Blessed Mother being close to them through scent alone. Beautiful. Meaning anything that we love, the scent of cinnamon buns baking, Holy Mother is there somewhere. The smell of brand new baby, fresh washed baby, that incomparable fragrance, Blessed Mother is there. That smell of sandalwood, that smell of first tiny carnation, Blessed Mother is there. And that's why Holy Mother is often adorned and surrounded by flowers. Flowers, gemstones, all the things that we think of as beautiful in terms of light, fragrance, what things taste like, what things feel like, what they sound like, what they look like, what we sense them to be. All of the senses belong to Holy Mother, and she can be met through our senses, especially the senses of delight that we carry. Isn't that amazing? I think that's amazing. That should be taught in every prayer book. It should. Because it's so direct. It's so present in our everyday. And so in this concept about the old believers who initiate the young into the tradition, into the devotion of Blessed Mother, this can be yours too. No matter how old you are, no matter what culture you come from, no matter what language you speak, it's already so. It only need be ritualized, formalized. You belong to Blessed Mother. She belongs to you. Todos tuos. You belong to her completely. So different people have different rituals. After I was consecrated to her as a little girl, I came home and I told my grandmothers and my aunts and my mother that I had been consecrated. My mother's, you know, she was a very pragmatic woman. Her idea was, that's fine, go peel the potatoes. But my aunts, who were much older, and my grandmothers, of course, who are also much older and also, of course, from the old country, they said, oh, we have to do something right away. And so the next weekend, they took me out. I took almost all my clothes off. I just had my little slip on. And they passed me through a tree, a young sapling tree, through the, you know, the two leaders that grow at the trunk of the tree. They passed me, picked me up, passed me through. And then they cut a little slice into the very young tree and they put a holy card. And then they bound the tree. And that tree was the way of moving from the world of just regular to the world of the holy, to pass from one side of the tree to the other. And the holy card in the middle of Blessed Mother, the holy card in the middle means that she sees in both worlds, and that hopefully maybe I will be able to see in both worlds too someday. So it was a blessing to place on a young child, saying, You are now of this world, and you are also of this other world that is so precious and so special for Holy Mother. And then right there, at the edge of the forest, we all knelt down and we said a full rosary. And I'll remember because the, you know, forest floor is not comfortable to kneel on. There's little pebbles, little, you know, tribalites and, you know, pine needles that, you know, poke you. And so you can ritualize this in any way that comes to you. Maybe you'll dream something. You know, dreams are instruction from Our Lady often also, especially if the dream has huge generosity, gratitude, huge mercy, huge grace to it in some way. You can say, ah, Blessed Mother visited me last night in the form of a crow that came and took the lint off my long black rebozo so that I would look just fine as I walked out into the forest to pick the red leaves off the maple tree. Now see, Blessed Mother is everywhere. She's everywhere for us. However, as you know, there are many people who would like to make her go away or say that she's nothing whatsoever. And about 15 years ago, I moved all my thousands of books and writings to a little house. And from the point of view maybe of some modern people, you know, there's maybe one way to become instantly eccentric, and that's to live in a gentrified neighborhood as though you are a gypsy. So that you, no matter where you go, what you do, your little house inside and out, as well as your own person, always stands out in some way that sometimes you wish that maybe you could be invisible a little bit. But nonetheless, I decided in the midst of very nicely manicured lawns and lots of nice people, you know, pushing the little children in the dual strollers and, you know, with their cars that did not look like my cars used to look, which was the back window shot out and one of the doors missing and the inside, you know, being used as extra storage for my library. In that neighborhood, I decided that I wanted to build a grotto to Our Lady of Guadalupe. In the time-honored tradition of the Latinos of burying an old clawfoot bathtub halfway into the ground and putting a statue of Our Lady in the top part and then planting flowers all around her. And I thought this would be wonderful. And bright plastic roses, you know, certain kinds, they don't fade in the sunlight. I mean, some do, but a lot don't. And so a lot of people have plastic roses, and sometimes they have maybe a little like a hidden music box, you know, behind the Our Lady of Guadalupe, though, and play, you know, Ave Maria, you know. Or they might have it lit up with Christmas tree lights in the middle of the summer. And I have to admit to you that I find them beautiful. I do. It's beautiful, and it's also beautiful in another way. It's beautiful because of the heart of the person who conceived it. That is, to me, an innocent heart. When I was in El Paso, and I was with the Guadalupanas there, the very elderly women and men who have lifelong devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe. They too, in the, you know, little place where they met, they had little Christmas tree lights all around Our Lady. And they had little paper mache dingle balls, you know, they usually put on draperies hanging in tiers around. And they had a little electric light bulb inside the Our Lady of Guadalupe statue, so she lit up from the inside. And I'm talking about people who are utterly devout, utterly. And to them, and to many of us who didn't grow up, say, you know, with the modern conveyances, this looks like magic to electrify with lights something, to put pretty colored tinsel and plastic around it. It seems so, wow, like, look how beautiful those colors are. So I decided this is what I wanted was a grotto. And so I planned and I drew and I made sort of drawings of how all. And pretty soon, I could hear the neighbors gossiping about this woman who was talking about getting a bathtub to put in the front yard, and that they were very disapproving of that. And I thought, okay, well, yeah. And as it turned out, one day, you know, as an old believer, you believe that all kinds of things can happen if you say, I would like to have something holy, something sacred. I would like to be a part of that. And all kinds of things can open doors, windows, people fall through. Well, what fell through for me was a drunken man. He was completely drunk. Only had 3 days' growth of beard. He smelled horrible. You know how people, when they're older, if they drink, their sweat literally smells bitter. It smells sour. And he told me that he was a mason, that he was a maker of walls, that he was a person who was a mudslinger, so to speak, with the trowel. And I said, really? And he said, I heard through the neighborhood that you wanted to build a grotto. And I think I'd like to build that for you. And I thought, wow. I asked for help, but is this what Our Lady meant? I mean, really, come on now. A drunken man? Well, not only a drunken man, but you know, he had long, dirty hair and had a couple teeth missing. And yet, you know, this really strange thing. You know how people go, oh, shucks, or oh, doggone it, or oh, darn it. You know what this man said? That, you know, those places in the conversation where you'd normally say, oh, heck with it. He'd say, by Nazareth. By Nazareth? I hadn't heard that since I left the backwoods. That's what people in the backwoods say. By Nazareth. It means I'm a Bible reader. I study Holy Scripture, or I know it orally even though I can't read or write. I thought, wow, is this a sign? You know how it is with signs from Holy Mother? Is that even when they're painted red, white, and blue and right in front of you, still going, are you sure? Is this a sign? Is this really a sign? Well, yeah, yes. Yes, the answer is yes. So he had drank everything he told me. He had drank pulque, and he had drank tequila and rum and shots and shooters and keggers and, I mean, you name it. And the more he talked, the more I was worried because, you know, I came from a alcoholic family, and I thought, well, phew, you know, who needs any more of this right now? But he sat down and he drew some drawings. And he asked me some questions, and we didn't talk about money, or we didn't talk about much of anything. It's just like he showed up one day with a bucket of mud and his trowel, and began digging a hole in the ground. And pretty soon, within a couple of weeks, this man, this drunk who had stumbled into my life, a stonemason by trade, and literally turned out a soul who had, as a child, lived in institution after institution because he'd had polio. And when he contracted polio, his parents abandoned him. And so, even though he's strong as an ox, he had one leg that was about as big around as a baseball bat. It was very thin, and the other leg very well developed. And you could see, you know, he told me he used to wear a brace all the time in the institutions, and it sometimes didn't fit and sometimes you didn't have one at all, and then you couldn't walk anywhere or go anywhere or do anything. And so he'd had a hard life. Well, and he showed up drunk every day. And, you know, the kind of drunk, I mean, you know, not falling down dead drunk, but definitely wavering around. And yet, man, he had been given a talent. His talent to slap the mud on and scrape it off with a trowel. And it was this, it was a rhythm that was so beautiful. And he did it perfectly. And his lines were exactly plumb. And suddenly, the foundation of the grotto was built. And he showed it to me. And he said, from what you told me about in Mexico, when the conquistadores came and they destroyed all the old holy sites, and that they used the people as slaves. And then when they died, they just mortared them into the walls of the churches they were building on top of the old temple holy site. He said, I want you to see what I've done here. I've dug Mary's well for you. And I looked, and at the bottom of the concrete that he'd poured, he had fashioned skulls that were at the very bottom of the well. And then on top of the skulls were rough-hewn stones that represented the old Aztec temple walls. And then atop those were modern-day bricks to show that this was just the layers of the old people, the ancients, la anciana, the old woman, the holy woman, that she still was going to be alive no matter what they tried to do to her. And I was amazed, and I noticed that he washed his hair, and that it was clean and shiny. And I thought, wow, I was wearing it Aztec style. Pulled it all back in a knot, put a stick through it. One day he showed up, he didn't have a shirt on. And he had his hair knotted back in the old traditional style, and he worked and he worked. And I watched him and I thought, something's come over him. And he asked me more and more questions about Our Lady, and I told him more and more about Our Lady of Guadalupe. And pretty soon, he had built two wells, a round one and one in the shape of a pregnant belly. Well, this is Mary, Maria, your Miriam. She's pregnant with her holy little child, see? On this other one over here, this is Mary's well, see? Now, I just found this pot, this terracotta pot, and I'm going to make it so it pours water into the well. And it'll always be beautiful because that's how you described her. She's always pouring out for other people. And it's hard to say. I almost don't have a word. It was like I felt like I was in the middle of Holy Mother, that we both were. That something was happening, that we were, could I say it this way, that she was pregnant with us? Yes, I think that. And so time went on, and again, still, no talk of money, no talk of anything. Just kept building and building and building and building. And so we went on, and I told him story after story about how the Nahua people enslaved, you know, had built for their conquerors the great basilica that you saw, that you see at Mexico City, near the hill of Tepeyac, where Don Diego saw Our Lady of Guadalupe for the first time. And meanwhile, this Guadalupe project had grown way beyond. And suddenly he said, come see. And he literally had built half of a cathedral. It was almost 6 feet tall. And he had built it out of stone that he had literally cut himself out of sandstone. Red. And I said, oh my God. I said, that's beautiful. And he said, I'm going to make you a replica of the basilica in Mexico City of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And what I realized was that he's actually sober. He actually did not come drunk anymore. And I said nothing. And we had conversation after conversation because he knew Holy Scripture. He knew it so well. It was unbelievable. And so we'll talk about the poetry of it. And he felt to me like a man who was starving for holy talk. You know what I mean? How many times do we get to talk holy talk to each other? To say, I see you. I see the hole in you that's just waiting to be filled with the sacred. And that's what we were doing. And so then he said, okay, now I'm going to make you a statue of Blessed Mother, of Our Lady of Guadalupe. She's going to be sitting down. He said, I'm going to put her inside the church that I've built. And now the church was complete. It had a little copper dome on top. I mean, it was beautiful. And he said, I need a model. And I said, well, my daughter. Use my daughter as a model. I said, but whatever you do, don't make Blessed Mother skinny. Don't make her bony. You know, make her kind of fat. You know, kind of make her cushiony. Make her generous in body, the way she is in spirit and in soul. And so he worked on her. Oh, so beautiful. He worked so lovingly on her feet, on her hands and her face, sculpting and taking away and adding. And he did it with such love. And I overheard him, his whispering to the stones, this is for us. This is for her. And he'd say, put a little bit more plaster on her cheek. And he'd go, there, my dear, there, there. So a softness had come into him and a pride. He could hardly wait to show me the very final moment that she was all complete. And he said to my close friend, Lucia, now, she should come at a certain time, but not before that time. And it should be in the morning. And of course, now it's, late spring. And she should just come. And I'll be ready. I'll be ready. But don't have her come before the time. Have her come right at the time I say. And so at the appointed time, I came through the gate. And there was music playing. Ave Maria. And beautiful green everywhere, somehow. I don't know how it happened. I swear to you, that yard had a star flower bush. I had a pine tree that was always looking scraggly and on its last legs. I had some bamboo along the fence line. And things had grown as though they had been fertilized by 5,000 holy people overnight. The leaves were huge and green on every single plant. The pine tree had come into its glory, bristling with green and pine cone. And all of this was surrounding Our Lady, and literally the bamboo was growing toward her. It had left the fence, and it was leaning as though it just wanted to be near her. And there she was in all her glory. He had literally sculpted copper lilies for her to hold in her arms, and then he had enameled the inside of the lilies with white and green. And there she was, huge, wide-hipped, sitting down in all of her glory with her beautiful face and her veil flowing and billowing around her. And beautiful fountain, Mary's well. Except she wasn't inside the church, she was outside of it. He had made Maria so big that she no longer fit inside the church. And I said, perfecto, is perfect, she who cannot be contained. Oh, perfect, perfect. And so we laughed and we cried. And it was such a beauty. I thought the miracle was that he became sober. That's what I thought the miracle was. That being close to Our Lady resacralized his life. Would it last? I don't know. Would it be forever? I don't know. All that I know is that if you have a taste of Our Lady, you'll always keep coming back. That it is so compelling, it's so beautiful, it's so nourishing, it's so pure, it's so beautiful, it is so ecstatic. So you would keep coming back and seeking it more and more and more. And so this story, the drunkard and the lady, was for me a huge teaching experience, as they will be teaching experiences for you too when you ask for something to come to you that is holy in nature, whether it's to have something revealed to you or to have help, to be drawn up out of the mud, to be put back together, to have your wounds washed, to be able to create something of value, to be able to recover something that's been lost. If you ask for signs, they will be right in front of you. There are signs everywhere. And if you follow them, not only will you see Our Lady in so many different ways, could you ever imagine Our Lady as the one who holds the drunk? Yes. Is there a picture of that somewhere? No. But yes, there is. It's in our minds, our hearts, our souls. It comes to life right before us, the way a painting can never come to life for us. This idea of Our Lady in Catholicism, she was elevated from being Christ's mother to having ascended to heaven, body and soul, fully body and soul. It's called the Dormition. It means that she went into a sleep or a deep rest, or some people say an ecstasy. And the angels came literally and lifted her body up, and she was an elder woman. She's an old woman at the time. And they gently lifted her dear old body up and carried her all the way to heaven so that she is personified, body and soul. Body and soul, not just spirit and soul, body and soul, in the heavenly realm. This is an astonishing thing. And it occurred in Pope declared such in the 1950s. And Carl Jung, I'm a Jungian psychoanalyst and a post-trauma specialist, so I studied Jung deeply many years ago when I first became a psychoanalyst. Jung actually wrote about this phenomenon where he said that for thousands of years, the religious groups have taken it out of context, that there is only this and there is only that, but there is no woman and there is no feminine. That he considered it the most important religious statement or event in the church since the Reformation. And that's really saying something. Listen, hundreds of years. He said that it was an unpsychological mind that the religions had had up until that point, where they thought that they could function without the force of the great feminine. He felt that the idea was that the Pope was attempting to demonstrate a deep psychological, almost explosion that had occurred in his own mind, a deep psychological truth. Psychic truth, sacred truth, ecstatic truth that had somehow come to him and compelled him so much that after literally 1900 years, he set the huge force of the feminine back in her place as something that is not an image, that is not an idea, that is a living human being who is carrying enormous divinity that supersedes all other humans, that supersedes, incidentally, even the angels, supersedes all the saints. And so that Jung noted this because he is the one who said that without the balance of the feminine, the whole world would be destroyed. That the balance of the feminine with her traits of being a warrior, of being a mother warrior, of being a maiden warrior, of being a crone, crone warrior. Those traits of compassion and love and mercy toward any little thing that could still live, that sense of cutting things whoosh, when needed, if they can no longer live and they must die. That whole spectrum of the feminine, he felt, was put back in place publicly because one man who was at the head of a huge religious group, I say there were over 1 billion Catholics in the world, head of that huge religious group had been deeply affected the same way the drunkard had been affected, the same way I'm affected, the same way you're affected. When we behold Blessed Mother in her entirety, in the magnitude, not in the minitude of little pictures or little scraps of paper or little words here and there, but the magnitude. And thus, you've probably heard about all the visitations that have taken place in the world at Lourdes, for instance, or at Fatima, or at Medjugorje. There are so hundreds of ones that appear to be sanctioned by the church, meaning the church sends out their examiners and says, actually, they have three choices. You can say, after you've examined the person who saw whatever they saw, whoever they saw, they could be thought to be mentally ill, non compos mentis, or they can be thought to actually have seen what they saw, or they can be decided that they can't tell. They don't know. Could be, could not be. So, don't know. So, this is the formal way that Fatima and Lourdes and other places, Medjugorje, incidentally, is not sanctioned by the Roman Catholic Church for various reasons. But I would just say this, that sanctioned or unsanctioned, Blessed Mother keeps showing up anyway. She shows up in everyone's life. She shows up at all kinds of places. She shows up where you least expect her and where you most want her. The thing is that seeing and being with Holy Mother isn't contingent on someone else's ideas. Not mine. Not anyone's. Only yours. Only your sense. And the only thing I would ever say, if there's a rule, the only rule I know about Blessed Mother is this. Does it make your life better, bigger, deeper, larger, holier? And if it does, I would say, that's evidence enough for me. That's evidence enough that she has come by and touched me with her wing. And you, that she's touched you with her wing in whatever way makes sense to you.
Holy. Holy Gregory, holy the unknown, bothered and suffering beggars, holy the hideous.
asylum. Only the cocks of the grandfathers of Caiaphas. Only the goaded saxophone. Only the bop apocalypse. Only the jazz bands, marijuana, hipsters, peace and junk and drums. Only the solitudes of skyscrapers and pavements. Only the cafeterias filled with the millions. Only the mysterious rivers and tears of the street. Shepherds of rebellion.
Only the visions, only the hallucinations, only the miracles, only the